Welcome to the Phil Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:53 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is September 19th. I thought we'd kick off with the 10-year yield. It's up to a new recovery high, and I think we'll also spend some time today looking at several other bond markets because the degree of commonality is quite high. What, of course, that helps to really emphasize is that inflation is not just in one country, it's in several, and that each country might have its own individual challenges, whether that is the budget deficits in the USA or the degree to which property markets are getting hit by higher rates in countries that have classically depended on floating rates, like the UK, Canada, or Australia. Then we've also seen a little bit of weaker action in the oil price. It's a bit overbought, so we might get some consolidation overall. Then there was a gas field in Norway has shut down, so that lends some support to gas prices in Europe and in the USA. I think the US prices are rather interesting since they've been in this rather lengthy base formation for quite some time. And Rio Tinto today came out and said that they think that China's demand for iron ore is peaking. Now, iron ore prices have been recovering more recently, but that's probably more about industry or industrial build of inventories ahead of the I guess the building cycle towards the end of the year, and also that restocking in the aftermath of the end of the lockdowns in China. But the reality is China has more steel production capacity than the rest of the world combined. So they're going to have to find somewhere to put all of that steel if they're not going to be building houses at the same pace. And well, they might put it into the military, for example, but or build a new aircraft carrier every other year, for example. But obviously, that would be a major increase in the military budget as a way of trying to soak up all of that additional supply. The other alternative, of course, is that they shut it down, and that the more polluting, less competitive sources of steel supply simply go out of business. So certainly plenty to think about today. So let's now just focus in first on the 10-year yield. So it's clearly potentially breaking on the upside here, and we're obviously going to have the Fed rate decision tomorrow, but bond investors aren't hanging around here. And we have lots of different competing themes. And there's certainly a willingness among investors to think that with ChatGPT that we're going to have this massive productivity gain and that it's going to make everyone's life easier. And certainly I can see some of the products of that right now. I think that the transcript for the podcast feature on Substack is becoming progressively better. It's certainly better this week than it was last week. And also, it's allowing me now the opportunity to take little snippets out and post them on social media. So that's all AI generated. That's certainly a massive productivity enhancer for me. Just by migrating to their service, it's allowing me much greater leeway to create different ways of promoting the service, which I hope will eventually translate into more subscribers. But then we have this continued rise in the bond yields. So investors on the stock market side are basically thinking that all problems are going to be solved by artificial intelligence, and that there's no need to really worry about inflation, or that there's really any issue because the jump in productivity is going to make everything better. And then bond market investors are selling, and they're not really showing any kind of enthusiasm for the argument that inflation is going to peak soon and that we're more likely to have a deflationary outcome. But then let's just look at some of these other government bond yields. So the 10-year Bund yield, the price was at a new reaction low on the future today. It still has falling wedge characteristics, and you have the rising wedge characteristic on the yield. It isn't at a new high just yet, but certainly the sequence of higher reaction lows is still intact. And then the UK 10-year has got, I think, the most convincing, although not quite convincing, evidence that a peak is in. We've had a couple of failed upside breaks. The yield is starting to come back down a bit, but it hasn't broken down yet. And certainly it would need to pull back down through that three, this level right here around the region of the 200-day moving average, which is around 4%. And then let's think about the Chinese 10-year yield. So that's right in the region of its lows. It's one of the few areas that has had any real issue with inflation, but the yield is moving higher, and it's looking increasingly likely that it has bottomed. Now, there has, if you're a bond investor, then China has looked really very attractive over the last several years because yields continued to contract as they were rising everywhere else. And there was certainly this popularized argument that the USA was where you went for stock market returns and China for bond market returns. And of course, as a creditor nation, there's some support for that view. But it does look like the yield has bottomed and that the surprises will now be on the upside. And that is probably more a reflection of the potential that China is going to have to issue a lot more debt, or that they're going to have to repurpose reserves in order to rescue the property sector. So I think that's also certainly something that is worth considering. And then let's look at the Canadian 10-year. The Canadian bond future was down in a fairly dynamic manner today, and that is popping the yield up. So now this is a clear breakout from the 12-month range, and we are now exceeding the levels that were put in ahead of the financial crisis. So I think this is a very meaningful move. And also, when we think about the Australian 10-year, and I am going to try and remember what that is. I'm sorry, I just cannot I can't remember what the Australian 10-year ticker is. And let me see if I can. Well, I'm going to look it up somewhere else. But then let's also think about Canada's currency. And the issue, of course, is that they have floating rate mortgages for a lot of the newer homes. And that is certainly something that is pressuring the market. And what I thought was interesting today was that it was the resources sector that was particularly on the downside. So when we think then about the outlook here, there is certainly the potential that Canada's market is going to experience some stress, and it's deeply reflective of the impact that higher rates and inflationary pressures are having, particularly on countries where where there hasn't been the insulation from fixed rate mortgages. Then I think Australia has a very similar type of issue, and They obviously have the benefit of being one of the major natural gas exporters, and but the 10-year yield is still right in the region of the upper side of this range for the Australian 10-year. So what we have here is a great deal of commonality, and the last holdout, China, is now starting to also roll over, and I think this is helping to highlight that. As we look out beyond the short term, the issue of excessive debt is something that everyone is going to have to deal with over the next several years. Now, let's also then think about the oil price. So, Brent crude got up to $95 and change, and it paused in here today. Just because it hasn't held the move above $95 doesn't mean that the entire trend is broken, but it's very likely that we'll get some consolidation. And pauses in the region of about $5 or $6 have been quite normal over the course of the last 6 months. So I think if we were to get a $5 pullback, then that wouldn't be all that surprising. And in fact, that would be quite normal in the course of this recovery trend overall. But the medium-term downtrend has been broken, and the price has bounced from the region of the 200-day moving average. So we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the potential for upside surprises as long as the region of the 200-day moving average continues to hold, even with the short-term overbought condition. And there is obviously the potential here that we're going to see some additional upside. Now, the thing that I think is most important is that spikes in the oil price have generally coincided with difficulties for the global economy. And that's potentially what we're looking at here on this occasion, too. If prices exceed $100 over the course of the next 6 or 7 weeks and then march onwards to 120, then that's going to be a material jump. And we're obviously then talking about the potential for an oil price spike. And against all that background, when we think about the outlook for iron ore demand from China, I haven't seen much. I haven't seen a similar comment on t in terms of copper demand, but copper is still quite weak. It's been within this range now for months, but the more important point is that we had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend a year ago, and subsequently the range has encountered resistance at the lower side of the overhead top, and now the price is just about holding steady in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And if China's government bond market continues to deteriorate, I think that's going to be additional fuel for thinking that China's economy is rolling over, that demand for commodities is going to take a hit. And that's something that's going to have a knock-on effect everywhere, and the downward pressure that we're seeing in Canada's bond market, and then it also has type 2 top formation with right-hand extension characteristics, and the index is just about holding here above the 1,000-day moving average. Then let's also look then at how is China's property market doing. So Longfor Group was downgraded in here today, and the share is right back in the region of its lows. And I think when we think about the broad Hong Kong property index, at least these are private companies. Many of these companies have got building operations in both Hong Kong and on the mainland, and it is now back in the region of the lows, but this was a closing low in here today. So continued deterioration in the property market. And when we think then about the wider market, we haven't seen property prices back at these levels since the big decline in 2008. But of course, debt is higher now than it was then, and obviously that's a significant issue. Now, Then we think about, well, what's China going to do about it? Well, so far they haven't been doing much. So when we think about the China Enterprises Index, it has rallied a little in here today, but certainly the sequence of lower rally highs remains very much intact, and this is going to continue to weigh. When we think about the broader environment, when I want to just look at the China Fund. So this has been one of the better funds investing in China over the longer term, and we have this long pattern of performance up from the lows in 1998. There's been a sequence of higher major reaction lows, but now we're testing the region of the, and this is monthly chart, so I wouldn't pay too much attention. 200 months is an awfully long trend. I think it's more important to just simply look at the progression of higher major reaction lows. So we're at an important area of potential support, and now the next question is, are we going to see the China Fund continue to bounce from this level, or is it going to break lower? Because this has been one of the better performing funds, and they haven't been invested in a lot of the property sector. They've been more focused on the technology sector. But there's obviously duress in the Chinese market. We're either now seeing an historic buying opportunity where valuations are attractive for a good portion of the market outside of property, or the Chinese economy is going to roll over and take much of the rest of the market with it. So I think when we think about the epicenter of potential risk, well, China is certainly in that category. Now, the other, of course, major potential risk is the continued trend higher in the government bonds of most countries, because that is putting additional pressure on borrowers. And obviously, where you have floating rate mortgages, it's an additional headwind. So the Australian market depends on continued demand for its exports, and natural gas is certainly taking over from iron ore and coal. Will it fully compensate? I think that's very much an open question, and there might be a greater reliance in future on the technology and the healthcare sectors rather than banking and commodities. And the ASX 200 continues to range here. There's a very mild upward bias to trading, but the internal dynamics of the range are both up and down. It's a very choppy environment without really going anywhere. But of course, then you have the additional point that the Australian dollar has been trending downwards, so that is helping to support the price on a nominal basis. So that is an additional factor that has been quite clear, that we've seen nominal price appreciation in the stock markets because currencies have been reasonably steady. Now, the South African rand, for example, is now beginning to trend downwards again with the dollar rising against it. So when we look at the Johannesburg All Share Index, then it's still right at the lower side of its range. It was in negative territory today, but it isn't breaking downwards. It's being supported by the weakness in the currency. And then we have the Indian rupee, which did make a new low in here today. So certainly the potential is that in the rupee is going to take another leg lower. Now, India has a lot going for it, but their balance of trade certainly needs to be addressed. And what they really need is to become or to plot some kind of route towards energy independence. The only possible way they can do that is to focus on nuclear energy. And that is capital intensive. Now, the Nifty index is a little overbought in the short term, but it is still marching higher. And of course, it is also being supported by the weakness in the currency. So, if we redenominate it into US dollars, we still have this trend of outperformance. Now, the Nikkei index has been a tower of strength, but it was in negative territory today following the holiday yesterday. And but we're still right in the region of the upper side of this range, with the yen continuing to devalue, then that is going to act as a clear source of support for the wider market, and hedged exposure to Japan is still doing very well, and DXJ just continues to march higher. So I think the market is pretty much holding its breath right now, and the S&P 500 was pretty much unchanged in here today, and so was the Nasdaq, and off the lows intraday. It was a very interesting day, and I posted a couple of charts in comment of the day depicting market profile, where the vast majority of trade happened outside the median value for the day, and that doesn't happen all that often, but certainly off the lows. And I think investors are just hanging on the hope that the Federal Reserve is going to give them something to hope for, that inflation is going to come back down, and that a soft landing is achievable. I would caution, though, that the dreams of a soft landing tend to appear before a recession every time and are rarely fulfilled. And the core services ex housing is going to be updated again. Let me just get the exact date. It's going to be updated on the 29th of September, so only 10 days from now. But it is up to 4.69%, and it has first step above the base characteristics. So we're going to have to see a meaningful contraction in order to clearly demonstrate that inflation is being brought under control. If we were to see it come back below 4%, then I think markets would take some heart from that. But of course, the other side of the argument is that once inflation is brought under control, perhaps then the greater risk will be that we should be thinking about deflation. And with the clear potential that central banks are going too far, and that they're waiting for data. Data can be lagging, so that by the time the data appears, they may have tightened too much. The fact that the Federal Reserve is doing that has been the primary support for the dollar. The fact that the ECB isn't willing to make that determination is why the euro has remained weak. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.